This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. A new car is kind of like a new book. It takes you places you never thought you could go. What will you drive into the next chapter of your life? It's fun to dream about your next car, but when you're done dreaming, you need to head to cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you find your dream car. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. Start your search with cars.com. Where to next?
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 14. This week, we heard Bob's interview with Madison McGee about her podcast, Ice Cold Case. This was a phenomenal listen about a phenomenal podcast produced by Madison about the murder of her father. Today, we are sans Janet, but Bob and I are here to dive into all your listener questions and theories. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
I don't think so. Just to let you guys know what we got coming up this week, I told you last week that I was going to be interviewing Dr. Amy Schlossberg and Dr. Megan Sachs from the Women in Crime podcast. Dr. Megan was unable to make it, but I did speak with Dr. Amy yesterday, and we had an awesome conversation. So that episode is going to be coming up on Sunday. And also found out, so do you remember when I had the guys from the Notre Dame Exoneration Clinic on?
Yeah, like a week ago? Well, I guess it was like a week for us, but I don't know when you actually interviewed them, probably a couple weeks.
Yeah. So they were, you know, they were talking about some of the Dr. Grulet or Professor Grulet was talking about how one of the things they do is they've done lately is they're really trying to work on like the reentry program and helping transition exonerees when they get out. So I'm talking to Dr. Amy. You guys will hear this on the podcast, so I don't want to give too much of it away. But yeah, that was her. They hired her to be at Notre Dame.
That's
to start that program.
How silly is that?
Yeah. And she's like, wait, are you close enough? I'm like, it's 10 minutes away from my house. And like, I'm right here. So her and Dr. Amy are going to be at Notre Dame Friday.
Nice.
Like the day this episode airs. So we're hoping that if she doesn't have other engagements through the evening, we're hoping to actually catch up and hang out while they're here. But it was like, she's like, I had no idea. She's like, I'm there all the time. I would have looked you up if I she always, you know, people think we're from Michigan.
Yeah.
They think Detroit or Lansing. I'm like, no, I'm like, me in particular, I'm barely in Michigan.
Barely in Michigan.
Yeah, like I go for a jog and I'm in Indiana. Like
You probably grocery shop there. In Indiana, don't you? Yeah, that's what I thought. We did when we lived there.
Yeah, my closest grocery store is in Indiana.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so that's the only housekeeping. I know everybody keeps asking about West Memphis 3. Dude, I am right there. It's driving me insane. I have no idea what's going on. I have no clue what's going on. We have got no... I know we don't have any results yet. That's all I know so far.
Yeah, I really hope this... I really hope something comes out of this, especially with all this waiting. I'm kind of terrified, you know, with all this waiting and waiting. I mean, we've played this waiting game for 20 years now, but I really hope that something comes out of this.
Yeah, about 33 years it's been going on.
Well, I know, but I just mean like in general for like since it's been brought to like the mainstream, it's been 20 years, you know, like it's.
Yeah. And it's like you play all these mental mind. I'm like, did they get the results and there was just nothing? And that's why we haven't heard anything. And I'm like, no, they would. I feel like the state would have meet because the state, you know, is the one that's going to get the response first.
Right.
Like, I feel like they would tell us that right away. Like they would there's nothing there.
Yeah. I'm sure if it's inconclusive, we would know. We would know immediately if it was inconclusive.
Yeah. So then like, I want to think like, okay, so did they find out who it is, and there's, you know, there's a reason, because we should have had the results by now. So yeah, I don't know. Your guess is as good, any of you listening, your guess is as good as mine about that. But on to the episode with Madison. Man, that was good. I'm glad, and I keep doing that. I did this during a pregame too. People recommend stuff to me and I never remember who they are and I don't write it down.
Yeah.
But there was two listeners that had reached out and suggested that I reach out to Madison, and super glad I did. Like, it was what a great conversation. We talked for a little while off the air too. Her podcast is really into. Did you get a chance to listen to any of her podcasts?
I have listened to the first four or five episodes. Yeah. Phenomenal. I'm going to keep listening. I'm going to finish it. Like,
me too.
And it's no flack to anybody. I've listened to so many podcasts and I do my best to listen to all of them. This is one that I'm just absolutely fascinated by. I think it's the whole idea that it's not just a podcast. It's not just a producer, content creator talking about a case. This is a personal journal for somebody about their life. And that makes it's just a totally different world we're opening.
It's such to me, it's very different from anything else I've ever listened to. And it is, yeah, it's a different ball game from anything else, because you can tell, especially if you get a little later in the episodes, that she has that documentary background, the way she's mixing stuff together. It's like, it's done very well. But at the same time, like, I've never listened to something where I more feel like I'm going on this journey with someone. You know, I have so much, I have the interest as I'm listening to it. I have interest, obviously, in the case. I have interest in, you know, figuring out who did this and all the kind of mysteries that are unraveled as it's going along. But at the same time, I'm also like heavily invested in Madison's journey, like the way she is so open and transparent throughout the process about what she's feeling and the struggles that she's having. It's just, I don't know. If for those of you listening, if you haven't listened to it yet, it is fascinating.
I mean, it's not quite to that, but it's almost like an audio diary. I mean, you're really, it's hers. It's her feelings. It's her emotions. And getting to sit there with her as she's finding this stuff out. And the other thing that I really, really appreciated that she's been doing, again, I'm only a few episodes in, but she is not cleansing anybody's past. You know what I mean? She's not pulling any punches. She is putting it all out there so that everybody knows, you know, there's no stone unturned. She's really going for it and showing you that, like, yeah, this is my father, but like, he was my father and I love him and he was a good man. He also has these demons and here are the demons.
Yeah. It would have been so easy for her to do what I think a lot of like creators do, to, you know, kind of sanitize them or to, you know, you brush on like he had a troubled past, but you know, what do they always say? You know, a smile that lights up a room, that type of thing. And she's just very brutally honest. And there's like all these layers to it too, because it's like she didn't have that close of a relationship with her dad and her dad had all these demons, but she's sharing that information to make sure that, you know, she's being honest with the information that she's putting out there. But at the same time, she's not letting that stop her. And that I think speaks to some of the bigger problems that we have in our criminal justice system, where like, we only want to help people if they fit a certain mold, and we only care if justice was served if somebody is, you know, a upstanding citizen, you know, like it's like, well, yeah, if they were wrongfully convicted but they were a piece of shit, then, you know, does it really matter? They would, you know, that kind of attitude. And that's detrimental to the work that we're all committed to doing in correcting course with our criminal justice system, which is like, justice is justice for everyone. You know, the Constitution says everyone deserves a fair trial. It doesn't say only good people or what are perceived as good people deserve a fair trial.
Right.
And so obviously what she's doing is not a trial. She's making a podcast, but she's pursuing truth and justice for her father despite his troubled past. And I think it's really admirable.
It is. And the part of humanizing people like that as well is really important. You know, I remember when we went through our missing persons season, you know, we had some of that where people were like, you know, we're going through and telling this person's missing and they're like, but they are druggy. They're on drugs. You're like, it they're missing. They're somebody's,
right.
They're somebody's brother, sister, mother, father, you know, child. Like, you have to, like you said, it doesn't matter if they're the biggest piece of shit in the world. You need justice for them and for their family.
So speaking of which, that just occurred to me. I don't remember. I had planned to, and I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but you remember the one case that really got my attention, the Alex Jackson case.
It has not been talked about on here. You posted it in the fan group, but I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah. So that was the one where I was like, holy shit. Like there's some clues here. And I actually called the local sheriff's department and gave them, you know, my thoughts on where I thought they should look and these different, like I was very invested into that case. And then as it turns out, the person that probably has nothing to do with anything that I sent them, but the person that I was directing them to, I think his name was Joe Shute, if I'm remembering correctly.
That sounds right.
It was the guy whose house he had visited that day. And kind of the big thing, if you remember from that, it's in season 13 somewhere. It's season 13, the episode titled Alex Jackson is the one we're talking about. I had a sister, Kayla, on. And it was like everything that they knew about his whereabouts that they were treating as fact. And what I pointed out to Kayla and the officer, I'm like, that entire timeline all comes from the same source. It all comes from this guy. So like, and none of it is like adding up. None of it's making sense. It's like, if we consider the fact that that guy's, his friend is not telling the truth and that his friend is the one that did something to him. There was a trial. I think I did mention on here that there was a trial that was starting for that. I should look up. I'll look it up here in a minute, but because I don't want to get the name wrong, but he was convicted of Alex Jackson's murder, which is no easy feat because they still have not recovered his body. So they don't know where he's at. So to secure a conviction without a body is very difficult to do. I saw a post where his defense attorney had said that, you know, there was not adequate evidence, this and that, but the jury at least thought that there was enough adequate evidence.
Yeah. Joseph Shute.
Yeah. So it was his name, Joe Shute. Yep. So he was convicted. I don't know if he's been sentenced yet, but it was just, it was like, I think 2 weeks ago when he was convicted, but I'm hoping to, I didn't want to do it right. Cause I know there's a lot of emotions going on right now. So I've been waiting a little bit, but I want to try to get Kayla back on the show, you know, just another opportunity to remember her brother.
Yeah.
And also I'm curious because obviously the trial wasn't televised or anything like that. So we don't know what happened there. I would love to get a breakdown of what happened. So it's at some point here, I'll probably give it a few more weeks. I'll, you know, just gently read if she's interested in talking about it to have her come on, because that was just one of the cases that just nagged at me for years after we did the episode on it. And I was always checking in. I'm still friends with her on Facebook, so I could kind of see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Saw there was an arrest made, then saw there was finally a trial and a conviction. So at least seemingly, at least there was justice was served in that case. Although, that's, you know, good. The family still doesn't have his remains, which is unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. That's really unfortunate.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's something, I'm guessing usually in situations like that, the prosecutor will be like offering a deal, like we'll give you a reduced sentence if you tell us where the body is or something like that. So that's why I was asking I was wondering if the sentencing has been done, because obviously he rejected any deal like that prior to trial.
Yeah.
But sometimes you'll see like a last minute deal on sentencing come up, you know, where they're like, okay, well, the jig's up now. I've been convicted. I'm facing, I don't know if he's facing life or if he's facing, you know, if there's capital punishment in, was it New Hampshire? It was somewhere over.
It was in New England. I can't remember exactly. It's been so long. I can't remember exactly. And I just closed the article because I'm a big old dum-dum. But that's what I do.
That's all right. I'm looking up. We can go ahead and move on to so we don't have a whole, I think we've got two comments or questions about the episode this week. Then We always throw these during these seasons out. You know, people can ask questions about whatever they want. And we got a few of those kind of random questions that we can work through. In the meantime, Zach's starting to work through this. I'm going to see if I can find some more information about this one.
So our first question is from Laura. And they say, I thought your discussion with Madison McGee about ethics was fascinating and a welcome glimpse into the life of an investigator and podcaster. I can't even imagine what it would be like to have all the releases and record an interview and then have them call you later to ask you not to broadcast it. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, and I think I would ask if that's ever happened to me. It definitely has happened to me.
There is a follow-up. I was letting you answer that. Then there is I'll just go ahead and read the follow-up. How often does that happen? And how do you decide whether to air it or not? And are there any other ethical dilemmas you find yourself in that you don't normally discuss on the air?
So usually for me, yeah, and that's the tricky part about this question. They do come up, but there's a reason I didn't talk about them on the air. For me, a lot of times if that happens, it's when I'm interviewing someone in a, not like a witness in a case or a suspect. Usually a lot of the times it is like a professor, like I'm interviewing like a lawyer or somebody that's connected to a case. And then like afterwards they're like, oh, I said something I shouldn't have said. And so my rule of thumb is I'm trying to think of that. There's probably been one or two times where I did not honor, because it was like, you know, what they said was very honest and appropriate. And they did, it was like, they didn't like the way that maybe that made them look. I'm like, well, you shouldn't have said it then. Ethical dilemma comes in. And I think we touched on this a little bit in our conversation, is that when you're agreeing to do an interview with someone, you know, in a journalistic capacity, you don't get to put the toothpaste back in the tube, right? So like if someone says, hey, I want to do a story about you, can I do an interview? And I record and I agree to it and I do the interview, I don't then later get to say you can't use that.
Right.
Right. So like once you've committed, you've done it, you're stuck with it. So then it's up to the journalist or the podcaster or whatever to decide, do I want to honor their wishes? Now, I've had many conversations with people that I think they probably didn't want aired, but you know, those are that I would call hostile witnesses or suspects in cases. But in those situations, I generally don't, they don't have my contact information. I mean, they could find it if they wanted to by like through the internet and stuff. And I have had people do that. I've had people like reach out, but usually it's somebody like when I'm out in the field, knock on somebody's door, record an interview with them. And then they're like, hey, don't air that. I'm like, dude, I told you I was recording an interview. In Madison's case, it was there, you know, I keep talking about these, about layers, but there were all these extra layers to it because the people she's talking about are family members. And so she was like interviewing family members who gave her the interview, agreed to be recorded, but then later thought better of it and thought, well, I didn't come off very good in that. I don't want people to hear that, even though I knew when I recorded it. And so making that decision, whether it's going to be aired or not for her, was not just the legal and ethical side of it. It's, well, what consequences or fallout am I willing to accept here? You know, like even if it's like legally, ethically, morally, I can air this interview and there's nothing they can do about it. But that also means that, you know, my cousin's never going to speak to me again and neither are 10 other family members, and it may hurt them, you know, in their community or whatever. So she had a lot to work through, and I don't want to answer for her about how she made those. I know we discussed it on the podcast, but it was a tough situation. And part of that, again, if you haven't listened to her podcast, you should listen to it, because that's what's so awesome about it, is she doesn't just like not air it. She like explains like, man, this was a problem. You know, yeah. I'm trying to learn how to do a podcast while learning how to investigate a murder. And then I did this. And then now they told me I can't air it. So I don't know what to do now.
It was interesting to hear her take. And I'm glad you guys, I'm aware of it, but I'm glad you guys kind of discussed the one party, two party state to kind of put some clarification on that too, because Michigan's a one-party state, if I'm not wrong. Is that correct, where we're from?
Yes.
And so just to dive into that for a split second, if, you know, obviously you're talking to me, I'm in Michigan, you're in Michigan, one-party state, one of us can record it, the other one doesn't have to consent to it. But let's say I was in Indiana, but you're in Michigan. How does that affect anything?
So that's tricky. Like, and I've only worked in one two-party state.
Okay.
I don't remember. I think it might have been in California. I don't even remember which one it was. But I remember having that conversation with my attorney, like, can I record? I think it was California. I think it was the Pinyon Pines case, but I'm not positive about it. But anyway, it gets into this weird, it's a weird gray area because, so if I'm in Michigan, I'm in a one-party state and I call you on the phone, in Michigan, I'm allowed to record that conversation. But if you're in a two-party state, you have an expectation to not be recorded because you're in a two-party state.
Right.
And it's one of those, if I remember correctly, there's not like real clear case law on it. I kind of think the advice I got was, if you don't want to duke it out in court, don't do it. I can't tell you if you would win or lose, because I definitely would have a defensible position.
Right.
And like, I was in a one-party state when I did it.
Correct.
But then they also have a defensible position. It's like, I was in a two-party state and had a reasonable expectation of privacy that I wouldn't be recorded on that call without consent. So, all I remember was the advice I got was don't.
Well, and something like that too. I mean, it would probably depend on what state they took you to court,
Right. Yeah. So if they tried to sue me in Michigan, where I'm at, I would win.
Right.
But if they tried to sue me in California, where they're at, I would lose. So yeah, that plays a role into it too. And then there's a battle over who gets the jurisdiction. That was essentially, again, the advice I got was, it would be ugly and it's not worth it to dip your toe into that.
That sounds about right. Our next question is from Sarah. They say, I've listened to Ice Cold Case from day one. I was intrigued by her saying the only thing she would change, if she had to, would be to not start. Is this attributed to things she's learned about her dad or the nature of her family, secrets, long-term incarceration that have blurred the motivation for justice?
I don't know. And I won't speak for her. I can tell you, like, as a content creator who's, you know, done work like this, not with people I knew or with family, you know, I took it to mean like the exhaustion of doing it. Like, you get into this project. Like I said, for me, just doing it for cases for people I'm not related to. It's a lot. It takes a lot out of you. But emotionally, I've talked about this many times, how, you know, like, over the years, I've made a conscious effort to not get too close with the people that I'm working with on the podcast, because I some people do. I don't have the capacity to. I lose sleep. It stresses me out. It gives me anxiety. It makes me sad. I like can't function when you're becoming best friend family, you know, like I was with Ed, or am with Ed, you know. And they're still in prison. Like, I remember, you know, the first time I went to visit, I did an episode about it, and I talked about how much it just absolutely broke me the first time I went and visited him. And then when the visit was over and I was leaving, and it just hit me that, like, he doesn't, like, I'm going to go out to dinner and go drive wherever I want and see whoever I want and talk to whoever I want and eat whatever I want. And he's going back into that cage. Like, and I can't see him again unless I make a plan to come back in a month to come in and see him again. And it obviously she wasn't dealing with somebody who was in prison, but so I took it to mean that it's like, you have this idea of what it's going to be like, and then you get into it and it consumes every second of your life. It consumes you when you're awake. It consumes you when you're asleep. And then she also had, you know, the fallout from her family. She also had the discovery of things she probably maybe didn't want to know about her dad.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I was thinking about that, is it's really a double-edged sword, because not only do you have that attachment, you know, to something like yourself with Ed, and if you wanted to, you could distance yourself, but this is her family. This is skeletons she's digging up for her own past that you just can't distance yourself from, regardless of what you want to do. You just can't. That's that's so tough.
Like, I imagine there's this, like, when you get started, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what no one ever did. And I'm going to try to solve my dad's murder. And I'm going to make it into a podcast, and I'm going to get all this support. And then you have an idea in your mind of what that's going to be like. You know, again, I not speaking for her, speaking from my own experience, you know, I'm coming up on May 1st, it'll be 11 years I've been doing this show. And, you know, when I started out, it was like, this is going to be great, because I'm going to have all the, and it is great. And there's so many tens of thousands of you that are so supportive and have been there, and we've accomplished so much. But at the same time, like, the more you become known to more people, the more negativity comes out. So for me, it's her family. For me, it's, you know, strangers. You know, that's, you know, I talk about all the time, especially like in our Patreon pregame, how like I shy away from social media so much because it's just, it's ugly. It's exhausting. So like, it's not what you think. So it's like, you're still getting the satisfaction of being out there and being able to help people and make positive connections with people. But that comes at a cost. It comes at a cost that just wears you down. And so I assume that all of that plays into why, you know, if she, and I also don't know how serious she was. I have a feeling if she had to do it over again, she would do it over again. But I definitely get the sentiment where you're like, oh, if I could do one thing different, it would be just to not freaking start this.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a perfect lead into our next question from Veronica. And she asks, if there was a cold case in your family, Bob, or friend circle, would you try to solve it?
Would I try to solve it?
Yeah,
100%. I don't think that's what the question asked, though.
It says, if there was a cold case in your family or friendship circle, would you try to solve it? That's 100% what the question asks.
I completely misread that question when I copied it and put it in there. So would I try to solve it? Yes, 100%. There's a situation right now with somebody that Becky knows that has a missing person. There's like a part of me just wants to get involved. There's a part of me that wants to be able to do this work, but in private sometimes. Like I said, don't get me wrong. I love doing it on the podcast. I love the community we built. I love all of that. But then there's part of it too, is like, it would be nice sometimes to be able to do the work and help people in private and not talk about it. Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if it was somebody in my own family or friend group, yeah. What I thought it said, and I have no idea why I thought this is what it said. I thought it said, who would you want to investigate it from, like the content creation space? No idea where I came up with that, but I'll answer my own question.
All right. Who would you want to solve it, Bob?
Besides me, I'm blown my mind that I was certain I knew what that question said. because I thought a lot about it, and I was like, you know, I think if I was going to pick somebody that I know, like from the space, to like work on solving a cold case for a loved one of mine, I think I would go with Susan Simpson.
I would say David Ridgen. That was mine.
Yeah, David Ridgen would be great too. Here's the thing about Susan. Like, Susan is brilliant, obviously, and you're never going to get a Brady violation past her. You're never going to get anything on paper past her. She's just amazing at all of that stuff. But what I've learned about Susan, especially since she started Proof, is she is a dog with a bone. Like she, Susan, and I've been lucky enough to really get to know Susan. I consider her a friend. I've spent time with her several different places throughout the country where we've been at different events, and we've worked together. And she is just, the best word I could use to describe her is she is bold. Like, if there's someone I've been doing this for a long time, and anytime I have to go knock on somebody's door, whether it's somebody who's friendly or not, if it's a stranger's door, I got to go knock on it to get some information about a case. The anxiety that boils up in me, it's what you feel. Like, people think, like, people ask me this that I work with, you know, in my other job. They're like, how do you do it? Like, that would scare the shit out of me. It does scare the shit out of me, but I just push through it. But Susan, if she has that feeling, she doesn't show it. She's just like, oh, we need to go knock on a stranger's door. There might be a murderer. Yeah. like she's just doing it. If I had to choose, I would say Susan because of her brilliant mind, her attention to detail, and her boldness. That's the answer to the question that no one asked.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know how you got that, but that's a good one. I even read it like two or three times.
I corrected you. Like, no, Zach, you've read that wrong.
Well, and listen, I wouldn't put it past me to read it wrong. So.
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This kind of wraps up the questions for the podcast we just listened to. The next few questions we have are more generic. So you want to get into those?
Yeah.
Amy says, my youngest turns 18 today. What advice would you give an 18-year-old you or an 18-year-old today's world? For what it's worth, she's been taking a full load at college since she was 16 and next year starts nursing school at one of the best nursing schools in the Midwest. She's a pretty mature kiddo.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations to her. And to you and her rest of her family. Those are two very different questions. So like 18-year-old me, that would be, you know, it would be just to, I don't know, keep working, you know, keep working hard, keep doing what you're doing. Don't be told what you can't do. Don't get locked into anything. Be willing to pivot and change. But that's a different, what do I say this because I have, you know, a 21-year-old and a 20-year-old and a 15-year-old. And I work with lots of 17 and 18-year-olds that are asking for life advice all the time. And it is, that's a different answer because today's society is so different. So it's a strange answer, but I would tell them you've got to learn to be uncomfortable. I think, and we talked about this in the Patreon pregame, but one of our listeners recommended a book to me that, so this is really heavily on my mind right now. The author, if you're looking for a really interesting book. I listened to it on audiobook, but it's called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter, I think his name is. And he gets into a lot of like actual scientific studies about how our constant state of comfort that we are in as a society now is negatively affecting everything from our mental health to our physical health. And he tells it through this lens of, he goes out on this like camping and hunting trip in Alaska in the Brooks Range. He lives in a teepee for a month in the mountains in Alaska hunting caribou, and how, you know, he goes, so that's a month without ever being warm, without ever having a home cooked meal, without ever having a toilet or a shower or all these different comforts, and, you know, kind of how it changed him. But like listening to a lot of like the scientific piece of that, where he's like interviewing PhDs in all these different areas and citing Harvard studies and things. I don't know. It really resonated with me. And it's something I think about like with my kids and my students, or a lot of them are like my kids, that I would tell them, like I said, you need to learn to be uncomfortable, because they just don't. There's so many, I have students that are so brilliant and bold in their work, in the comfort of their classroom. And if they have to call, like in my investigative journalism class, they have to call a witness, they will freak out because they have to talk to somebody, because they're not used to talking to people. They don't, there's all kinds of, I can go down rabbit holes forever about how this generation, and it's not judging them or saying that it's wrong, but I don't think it's healthy for them to where this digital, and it's not as simple as, oh, social media is ruining things or video games are ruining things, but it's what it is they become so connected in a digital world that they're not connecting in the real world outside of that with people anymore. And I think that is a huge detriment. They're losing the ability to communicate with people. There was one of the studies that was cited in that book talked about core strength, how Americans as a society, and it's getting worse with the younger generation, have no core strength because we sit in comfortable chair. Everything, everywhere, you know, your car has heated and air conditioned seats and you have the most comfortable office chair and you're the most comfortable bed and all these, and all that. It's like, we don't have core strength anymore. And then there's all these, you know, how that affects everything. And I think on the mental side of it, it leads to people have an inability. I've noticed young, that 18-year-old-ish generation, they're not being taught by parents or teachers or adults in their lives to solve their own problems. And so I guess less generally than learn to be uncomfortable would be make a point to solve your own problems. Because I mean, I had a student yesterday that interrupted me in the middle of a conversation to tell me that they couldn't, that their Chromebook was dead and they couldn't find a place to charge it. Now, I teach in a computer lab. There are 18 seats. Underneath each seat in the desk is a 4-gang outlet with one thing plugged into it. There are literally dozens of outlets in the room. But their first reaction was to say, oh, I have a problem. Mr. Ruff, how do you solve my problem for me? And my kids give me a hard time because I, no matter what the problem is, my response is almost always, see if you can solve that problem by yourself. If you can't, come back to me. Whether it's, you know, an editing issue that they're having or something they can't remember or whatever. But that inability to solve, and that is not their fault. It's our fault. So I guess, man, this is a long rambly answer to a to a short question. But as I'm thinking about it, it's the wrong question. The for me, from the things that I see as a big detriment to an 18-year-old getting ready to graduate high school, it's not as much of what advice does the 18-year-old need. It's what advice do their parents, guardians, teachers need. And my advice to them would be, let them make mistakes. Let them solve problems. Hold them accountable to things like deadlines. And I think that is going to serve them better in life. We're training 18-year-olds to be very intelligent when it comes to, you know, what we would used to call book smarts. But are they ready to go, you know, stop training kids to be the best kids and start training kids to be the best adults, because that's supposed to be our goal. And there's some advice that no one asked for me.
Ready? Here comes mine. Mine's real simple. Stop getting your damn hands and neck and face tattooed when you're 18. You don't know any better.
Well, you're doing it to them.
I don't.
Yeah.
Tattooers, stop tattooing 18-year-olds' hands, necks, and faces for a dime. I almost cussed the big F-bomb on there.
Yeah, right. That's very good. That's very good advice.
I have kids come to me all the time, and I will absolutely not do it. I'm not ruining your life for a few dollars because you're not mature enough to understand it's a bad decision. And I'm not dogging these kids. They don't understand. They have no real-world experience. And I'm a big hypocrite, right? I have my hands tattooed. I've tattooed for 22 years. Like, that is my career.
Yeah, you're a tattoo artist. It's probably okay for you to have your hands tattooed.
Right, but I have kids. We have a mutual friend's kid that asked me to tattoo his hand the other day, and I said, no, absolutely not.
No way.
Like, you have no idea what you're doing in life right now, what you're going to do in life in the next 10 years. I'm not ruining your life because you want a cool little thing. Like, it's not worth it.
Now the problem is they all go on Amazon and buy a stick and poke machine and they do it in their basements.
I know.
I had a student that came back from spring break this week and was like, Mr. Ruff, check it out. I got a tattoo. And this student happened to have, they just turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, it looked terrible. I didn't say that, but I'm like, where did you have that done? Oh, my friend did it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good idea.
All right.
Good idea.
We'll move on from this. Sue asks, Bob, what do you intend to do with your private investigator credentials?
Good question. I don't know. So ideally, it'll do a couple of things. One is when I'm working on cases like, so I'll be done with my bachelor's degree in criminal justice here in a few weeks. Then I'll be able to get my Indiana license as well. And as soon as I do, I'm hoping to then reconnect with Chris Bynum's team in Indiana, where I can continue to work on that case as a defense investigator, not a podcaster. So there's the hope where when we're working on a case for the podcast, when we get to those points that we always inevitably get to where I can't talk about what we're doing anymore on the podcast, that I can convert to being a, because right now I can't be on a defense team. You know, with the confidentiality and everything, like you can't hire a random person to be your investigator. They have to be a licensed investigator. So that allowed me to continue to do that. Aside from that, I would like to do other defense investigation work. And frankly, you know, you guys have heard me talk about this enough. Like the industry right now, the podcasting industry is getting harder and harder to make a living at for a lot of people. And we've talked, you see, there's podcasts after podcasts that are just going away, going on sabbaticals that never, they're just, you know, the big money in the industry, the Amazons and Spotify's and iHearts are sucking up all of the advertising revenue and leaving a lot of the independent creators in bad shape. We survive primarily because we have an incredible Patreon community. We've got a whole bunch of people that pay $5 a month to get our silly extra videos and ad free. And that if it wasn't for that, then our show would also be on a never ending sabbatical, probably, because there really isn't any ad revenue. So and any of you that are self-employed will understand this. Part of me as a self-employed person for the last 11 years always has a sky is falling mentality, which means even when things are going good, I always have to have a plan B on the back burner. So, you know, part of it is if the podcasting industry ever just completely crumbles and falls apart and it just, there's just no way to make a living on it anymore, then I will have that license, because I love the work that I do. I love working on wrongful convictions. I love the investigative work. I love doing that work, and it's very meaningful and impactful in my life. So that gives me the opportunity, just in case I ever get in that situation, where I can continue doing that work. So those are kind of the two avenues. One is to continue the work that we're doing on the podcast beyond when we can't talk about it anymore. Two is it's kind of a backup plan for me to be able to, you know, if something ever happens with the podcast where it just gets to a point where it's unsustainable anymore, then I still have another way to still, you know, I still have a family to feed, and that's how I can pay the bills. So,
but that's a hell of a backup plan for you, because you have said it since the day I've met you, is if for some reason you won the lottery, you won a bunch of money, you didn't ever had to work again, you've told me multiple times you would still continue to work, maybe more in privacy, but you would continue to work on stuff like this.
Yeah, 100%. Like I don't see myself ever retiring like the way normal people retire, yeah, where they just like stop working. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's kind of the other piece of it too, is I'm always planning ahead too. So it's like at some point I am going to want to retire from, you know, work, having, you know, two deadlines a week on the podcast and writing scripts and doing all that stuff. At some point, there will come a time in my life where I am going to want to retire from that, but I'm not going to want to stop doing work for the wrongfully convicted. So I have that there. So when I get to that point, I could do it as a retirement job too, where I can go help. And my pie in the sky goal would be to be in a situation where I would be able to continue doing that, like pro bono for people, and to be able to help people in that way. Because right now I've never charged anybody for anything. The way it's always been up till now is I'm able to provide these investigative services for these attorneys and people who are wrongfully convicted free of charge, because the advertising for the podcast pays my salary. So, you know, it's just another opportunity. So the short answer is it's just a backup plan, really, in case I need it. And in the meantime, I hope to use it for the cases that we've already worked on, because that's part of why I'm making sure I finish the degree, even though I already have my license. I mean, once I have my bachelor's degree, then in almost every state, I can almost automatically get a license. So like if Allison and Mike from the Innocence Project of Texas were to call me and be like, hey, we need your help on a case down here, I can quick apply and I can get licensed in Texas. I can get licensed in Indiana, which is right around the border. I can get licensed anywhere and not have to go through this big process that I went through to get my Michigan license without the degree.
Well, since we're talking about the podcast a little bit, this is our last question, and it's a little bit about production of our podcast. And Haley asks, as you've been listening to other podcasters' work, has it given you any ideas or inspirations that you might want to apply to Truth and Justice?
Yeah, I mean, I always get inspiration. You mentioned David Ridgen, and we've talked about this many times before. Like, this, the Someone Knows Something podcast is always been, and there's a new season out right now, I think. I haven't listened to it yet. The way David puts those episodes together, I've always, like, wanted to do that. And usually what you hear, especially in the older seasons, is, like, you'll hear, like, the first five episodes are like that. Like, we'll get out in the field, and we record a bunch of ambient sounds, and we record, you know, everything, and we piece together these really massive. So that's always the goal. But, the, you know, we have, the production team is me and part-time Erica, and now, you know, I have another job, too. So it's, like, we're not able to do that in the way that I would love to, but that's definitely the inspiration. But one thing that I noticed, and I don't want to give too much away from Sunday's episode, but, like, I just talked about this with Dr. Schlossberg, is, you know, some of the, and Bob Mott is another one that have kind of, like, taken and started to put the show more on video on YouTube. I want to do that. I'm trying to figure out the space. Right now we stream our follow-ups on usually Tuesday nights for people to watch while we're recording the follow-up on YouTube. And then all the other video work we do is exclusive to our patrons, because, you know, that's how we're literally paying the bills right now. So I'm trying to figure out where that sweet spot is. Yeah, I'm looking at the podcasts that are, like, surviving, that are surviving and thriving, are kind of making that jump to where they're putting out a lot more video content. And if we're talking about from the production side, so I would love to figure out a way to do more of that. I enjoy it. I love live streaming. When we do both our Patreon live stream for the pregame every week, and then the live stream of the follow-up, it's one of my favorite things to do, because I get to, like, in real time interact with Zach and Janet around here, but then also the whole chat that's going on at the same time. You know, like, right now there's 155 people that are watching us live while we're recording this. And it's cool to be able to, like, interact with people on a personal level like that. So just got to figure out what that looks like.
No, that's great. So that was our last question. Do you want to one more time hit us with what we're going to hear this week?
Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap things up. So yeah, as I said, we have Dr. Amy Schlossberg from the Women in Crime podcast. She joined me. I just recorded that on Monday. Just a great conversation. We're all over the place. We cover everything from problems in the criminal justice system, the work she does, her work she did at the University of Notre Dame Exoneration Clinic, and the fact that she's going to be 10 minutes away from me on Friday, so I might see her. So yeah, fun conversation. Always like talking to Dr. Amy. That's coming up on Sunday. And with that being said, I think that's all we got, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.